Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are back with a new edition of the Terry's Talking Podcast. I'm David Campbell, sports manager at Cleveland.com. And with us, as always, from this time from Goodyear, Arizona, Terry Pluto. Terry, how's it going out there?
I am doing very well. It's raining today, which I wonder whether they'll play or not. But it's been nice to be out here the last couple of days, catch a little bit of baseball. Yeah, spring training is really good. It's relaxed. And David, I mean, it's so much different than a year ago where they were – I mentioned in my scribbles for this morning that Ahmed Rosario was trying to play the outfield, if you recall. Bobby Bradley was going to play first base or DH or something. They were trying to figure out where to play Yu Chang. In fact, basically, they put Bradley at first, Yu Chang at second, Jimenez at short, and Jose at third. Austin Hedges was the catcher. And with no clue what was to come with, you know, the 17 players coming from the minors or the 92 wins.
Well, yeah, that seems like 10 years ago, and
yeah,
man, it's so weird. It's so weird. So, so we were off last week, Terry, and now you're out in Goodyear. I guess we can get right into the Guardians. You've been writing, I guess, about how fans really should not underappreciate Ahmed Rosario and what he has done and what he's meant to this team, both in terms of his production and his attitude. And, you know, you've been seeing him in spring training the last few days, and he is just doing what he does, what he did last season. Nothing has changed. I mean, he hustles and hits and does whatever they ask him to do, right?
I mean, he's an interesting player. Analytics doesn't like him because he doesn't walk that much. And it's one of those players, reminds me a little bit of Rajay Davis in that he looks better than the stats say, but the stats sometimes can lie. And how about his combination of he led the American League in infield hits and in triples? The last 2 years, he's hit exactly 11 homers for the Guardians. In 81, he batted 282. In 82, he batted 283. I mean, basically 21, he batted 282. The following year, 283. I mean, he's remarkably consistent. He plays every single day. You know, it's just one of those, since he's come to the Guardians, he has stolen 31 bases, been caught four times. Even stuff like his slugging percentage, 409, 403. And I know Francona values that because you just kind of write it in and this is what he's going to do. And he's also improved, his infield defense. And then the flip side, they have 8 million shortstops running around in camp.
And it's all kind of tied together, isn't it, Terry? Like, this could be the last season for Ahmed Rosario, who might price himself out of Cleveland. And like you said, they've got some guys that they like. If you were to kind of project which of the up-and-comers might move into that shortstop spot next year, who would you say?
Well, before I came to spring training and before that began, it probably would have been Roccaccio. I hope I'm saying that right. Roccaccio, who played at Double A.
Brian, is it Rocchio? It's Rocchio, right?
Rocchio. I'm sorry. Yeah, Rocchio. Okay. Yeah, at Triple A. And he played end of the year at Triple A there. And I think he's going to go back. They just sent him down. I saw him play on Monday. And he's very smooth. He's got a strong arm. I really like him on that. And you look at last year, Between double A and triple A, he had 257. Doesn't sound like much, but he just turned 22 in January. So he was playing a double A and triple A at the age of 21. And he also hit 18 homers. And when you think about how Jimenez's, for example, his production was increased as he just got a little older, that could happen with this guy. Now, then I came to spring training, and Tom Hamilton had been telling me for about a month, because I talk to him usually every week and when he's done a good year, what's going on. And then I've got to watch in the last couple of days. Gabriel Arias is back to being that hot prospect that they really liked that they got in the trade for Clevinger. Arias had a rough year last year. He had a broken hand. He had some other injuries. Just in fact, he ended up on the team anyway. You can win some few bucks on this. People don't remember who was playing first base against the Yankees the last couple of games. Remember, it was Arias because he had soured on Owen Miller's defense in that. But he has played a lot of second, third. He looks terrific. I mean, he really does. And so I mean, if you were to say who would be the immediate first bet, it would be him. But both of those guys, then you have these other guys like Tena, and I'm looking at Arias, so I just wanted to look up his age. He's 23. So we're talking about Rocchio just turned 22, Arias is 23, which meant last year at the age of 22, he was already in the big leagues. So we have to be very careful on these guys. Part of the reason that Rosario was written off some with the Mets is he came up so young. And also, he was considered a top 10 or 12 prospect in all of baseball. And, he looks good, but he's not great. I do love this part of baseball because it's so different than the other sports. Terry Francona and I were talking about that. For example, you could draft in football. How many guys they draft now? Seven, eight. I go with 7 rounds. They've cut the draft back to like 30 rounds, not counting all the players from the Dominican and everywhere else. Rob Seferio is the Guardians minor league director, and I had a long talk with him for a story to come up. And he said, well, right now we're limited to 180 players domestically. And I'm like, what does that mean? He said, basically, American players or players, Puerto Rican eligible for the draft, only 180. They're used to having more.
Right.
Think about that. Then he said, I said, well, what about your players in your Dominican complex? He said, it's kind of unlimited now. We have 70. He goes, other teams have more, some teams have less. So let's just round it off to 250 guys in the farm system.
Jeez.
Yeah. So you're
That's
trying to
something.
fight your way through it. But here's the other thing, David. A guy like, say, we'll go with Brennan, drafted in the 8th round, not particularly a hot prospect. In fact, some people thought that he was quote unquote overdrafted at that spot. 250th pick in the 2020, 2019 draft, Will Brennan. But because baseball, you actually go out and play and you have farm teams, you could hit or pitch your way out of that ranking. In football, it's pretty hard. You're in there and it's like, you limited amount of snaps or whatever, and suddenly the next thing you know, you're a guy bouncing from team to team, especially if you're one of those lower picks.
Yeah, that's a great point, Terry. Hey, one thing I wanted to ask about Arias. We see this with the Guardians every year. Like, they do an incredible job kind of walking the line between trying something and pulling the plug on it. And then every year, like in May, it seems like in May, they take inventory and they're like, all right, we need to bring these three guys up and send these three guys away. Is Gabriel Arias somebody that could start the season as like the utility guy on that team, or do you see them maybe having him start in Columbus and bring him up in May? What do you think? What are you hearing, I guess, about him?
I think he's the utility guy. Tyler Freeman was trying to win that role, but Freeman right now is he's just got the spring training jitters. And they're playing these guys a little bit in the outfield and they're middle infielders. And I think that's been difficult. Now, the outfield in Arizona is hard. The wind blows, the sun is bright, the sky is blue. When the balls hit to you, it's like a black dot in that. It really is. And that's what's interesting. You watch I swear, Miles Straw could run down fly balls at the wall in a hurricane. It's amazing. The other day, the wind was blowing all over the place, and guys are having trouble. And he's just like, he turns around back to the plate. It's almost like he's jogging, just catches it right on the track, turns around, throws it in. And but most other guys are, it's a miserable time. So yes, I think Arias is going to be that guy, as the utility guy that they think they could play all over the place. But when they played him at first base those last couple of games in that Yankee series, that told you something.
Boy, and before we move on from Arias, Terry, that Mike Clevinger deal just looks
Oh.
better and better and better with every passing month. It really was something that they pulled that off. So,
You keep going, all right, if you just find a list, you got Quantrill. He's in your rotation. You got Naylor at first base. You've got you turn around and now you have Arias. Rob Serfurlio, the minor league director, was raving to me about Juan Cantillo. I'm sorry, Joey Cantillo, a lefty pitcher they just sent to the minors. He thinks he could be a guy on the way up, coming soon. Of course, they all love their catchers. Owen Miller, he's now with the Brewers, and Austin Hedges was in that trade. But they still have Cantillo, they still have Naylor, they still have Quantrill. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And Clevinger is now with the White Sox. Went to the Padres, had his second Tommy John, and became a free agent. Now he's with the White Sox.
That's going to go down as one of the great trades in franchise history, I think, when all is said and done. So, all right, Terry, I need to ask you about Zach Plesac. Given the way things have gone for him and the way things are going, it seems like Tito's saying he's working on some things delivery wise, and we're seeing that in games instead of in side sessions. So he's kind of working out some delivery issues, and it's showing up in a box score, which is it's not ideal. If you're Zach Plesac, should you be worried at this point? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you should be worried because you're not pitching well, period. But in terms of what's going to happen, I think they'll open the season with him in the rotation. Unfortunately, a guy who maybe would have had a chance to maybe take that spot would have been Pilkington, Connor Pilkington, from a year ago. But he got shelled his last outing, and so I think they really need to send Pilkington back to the minors. Remember, he was Mr. Come up, go down last year, and he just needs to pitch. And that's another thing that I know I'm mentioning Rob Serfurlio a lot, the farm director, but when you get a chance to sit down and talk to a guy like that for 40 minutes, he gives you just a tremendous amount of insight because he's watched these guys develop. Pilkington, actually, he made 15 starts. He had a 3.88 ERA. Oh, it's interesting. He averaged barely four innings a start when he was with Cleveland. And then he would go back to AAA, and he started 12 games there, and he had a 5.88. And he said the kid was basically kind of a mental mess, up and down. And this is a pitcher they like, but he's probably not ready. So that's why Plesac will get his chance. And they have Xavien Curry and a couple of these other guys, but they want to get Plesac straightened out. But I have to admit, when you hear they're working on his delivery and we're in the middle of March, I mean, that's a sign that they saw something's off with it too.
Yeah, it's been a rough, what, eight months for him. So I guess we'll
Well,
see
no,
if
I would
things
say it's a rough 2 years. In the last, no, seriously, since
No,
the
I
in
know.
2021 and 22, along with a couple of the dumb things he did, the numbers are the numbers. He's 12-18 with a 4.6 ERA.
Yeah, and that speaks to that. So, hey Terry, anything else from Goodyear you want to get into? Things you want to talk about that you're going to see today, or things
Or
coming up that
just
you're going to be
well, a
writing
couple of
about?
things that are fun to see. Stephen Kwan's hitting 348. I mean, granted, it's a spring training, but it was just like it's just like Kwan just looks like Kwan. That kind of thing. I was really happy to see how Beaver was throwing yesterday. Good talk with him for a story coming up about last year and the mental things he had to fight through coming off. See, we forget last year, he's coming off arm problems in 21. He pitched 200 innings, but he was telling me what a struggle it was for him mentally and how much better he feels now. So, when you see your ace throw like that, that's terrific. And so overall, the good thing is we're not sitting in here going, they have all these gaps to there, and can Bobby Bradley play? Can Yu Chang play? You're not into that at all. You know that you can go right, you can do the whole lineup. Zunino's going to catch. He looks fine, but we'll see how that goes when it counts. You got Naylor at first, and Jimenez at second, and Rosario at short, and Jose in the outfield. You got Oscar Gonzalez, and you've got Straw, and you've got Kwan, and Brennan, who's hitting the ball hard. You're all set. I want to see Savali throw. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool, and we need to get on the record, Terry, that Roberta, your wife, has found her favorite prospect of 2023 spring training, if you want to, let's get
yes,
that
it
on the
is,
record.
It is Rocchio.
Rocchio.
That was her guy. And remember, you can say, well, he's kind of rated high by Baseball America. She does not read the scouting reports in any of those. She just watches a couple games and says that, just like she did a couple years ago with Quant. So we shall see.
Yep. And our listeners, as we've talked about, and you just mentioned, she picked Stephen Kwan right out. And
in 2021. Not 22, 21, yep. When he had just come up from A-ball to play in a spring game.
All right. Hey, read Terry's stuff. He's going to be out in Goodyear through the end of the week. Just go to cleveland.com/Pluto and you'll see all of Terry's stuff. So Terry, I know your mind is on baseball. Why don't we get into the Cavs a little bit here? 44-27. They're locked into that fourth spot in the East. And I've been thinking about it. That might not actually be a bad place for them. They're looking at playing either the Knicks or the Nets, I think, if the playoffs started today, and that's not bad, right? So
sure,
yeah.
I mean, so you haven't made the playoffs without LeBron since 1998, and you want to kind of say, I don't want to be in the fourth spot, you know? No, you want the home court, and if you have the home court and you can't beat the Knicks or the Nets at this point, you're probably not ready to go to the second round.
Yeah, and avoiding the Heat would, you know, if the Heat makes it through, would be a good thing. So anyway, you've been writing about the Cavs bench, Terry, and I think we saw this play out last night in the win over Charlotte. I like these back-to-back road games, by the way. I think they're a really good idea by the NBA, where you play – the Cavs played in Charlotte last night, and they played there on Monday. And next week, they got two games back-to-back at Brooklyn. But are you worried about this Cavs bench, Terry, going into the playoffs? This is kind of the dog days of the NBA season. It's kind of like August in baseball, and the games are, you know, some of them don't mean a whole lot, but are you worried about this bench going into the playoffs?
Because it's different than I think what we thought. The decline of Love hurt it tremendously, because that was a guy who is not only the instant offense, is, you know, he's still with Miami, he's still a really good defensive rebounder. If you watch it, he still does that. He still draws some charges. His shot's broken. I mean, it's a line drive. He always had a line drive, but this thing now, there's something wrong, whether it's his back or thumb or both, confidence. And the guy's really struggling. And they don't have anybody else like that. Dean Wade also looks like he's kind of broken. You know, he's struggling. See, they thought he would be able to kind of do a really good lesser degree of Love imitation, but he's not been able to do that. I do think when you look at the rest of them, I still would like to see more from LeVert. He's so inconsistent. I know he plays hard in that, but I just thought he'd be more of a scorer. Rubio, he may just get better as he plays along as that knee gets stronger. But when the NBA is so they look at the scouting, they say, look, if that guy wants to shoot, if Rubio wants to shoot from the outside, let him. If any of these guys want, basically, that's your problem. There's nobody there that's really been with any consistent shooting at all. Where before, say, when Love was coming off the bench and that, they said, you know, this guy in a 3-point line, so they were going to have to bring somebody out or they were going to get hurt by him.
Yeah, and you've written about this, Terry. The Cavs, last season, I think they were 19th in the league in bench scoring. And this season, the last few days, they were 29th.
Yeah.
But, you know, the playoffs are so matchup intensive. And it's just usually going into the playoffs, you know, all right, these guys are the starters. The rotation is going to be this guy coming at the end of the first quarter. And I just feel like that JB Bickerstaff can't really rely on anybody consistently every night. I mean, Jetty Osman had a nice game last night, but his talk about shots, I think
he
threw in a three, he banked in a 3-pointer, you know, like, and the first few shots he took just were really ugly. And then he finished with 24 points. It's just, there's nobody you can rely on as like a good sixth, seventh, eighth option.
And you
night.
Still, yes, you're going to play these guys 35 to 42 minutes in the playoffs. Nonetheless, you do need somebody else to play some minutes. And also you need a guy in the playoffs who comes off the bench and steals a game. He gets hot for a quarter, something like that. And, you know, maybe LeVert steps up and does that. I still am positive about Rubio, but I wish when Rubio's in there, especially with Mitchell needs to give Rubio the ball to bring it up. I know Mitchell and Garland kind of have this thing of sort of whoever gets it just brings it up and the other guy plays off the ball and that. But Rubio off the ball is kind of worthless. I mean, he just stands on the wing, and they don't think he could shoot right now. So what's the point? But Rubio with the ball, he's running pick and rolls. He's making sure people get lined up the right way. Maybe he does one of those kind of weird drives where he goes to the left side and he seems to be falling out of bounds and makes a little bank shot from 6 feet. That's what he was. Rubio needs to have the ball when he's on the floor for them to be better. And whether you're Mitchell and Garland, by the way, knows that and has always had been given the ball to Ricky. So I do think that's one thing that could be fixed fairly easily.
I think that's a good idea, Terry. And number one, having the offense start with Rubio having the
Yes.
ball in his hands is a good thing. And number two, especially when you get in the playoffs, like if they decide to pressure Garland or Mitchell bringing the ball up, I mean, not that you're worried about them turning it over, but it's just wearing, it's just like mental,
Sure.
it's more mental strain that you don't really need. Like let Rubio bring it up and you guys just trot down and get set in the offense instead of having to worry about somebody picking your pocket in the backcourt.
And he's played 100 years across the globe. I mean, almost name a country that has basketball, he's played there. And meanwhile, and they would go play in the NBA. That's part of the reason is probably why his knees wore down. He's had two ACLs in the same knees, just played year round everywhere. But I trust him enormously with the ball. And they need to get that going. And maybe somehow Rubio and LeVert could get some sort of combination. I would play them more together. I know it's hard. JB's trying to win as many games as he can, but just to develop some chemistry with them.
All right, Terry, we'll take a break here in a second. The Cavs are 44 and 27. They're
I know.
closing in on the
Wow.
50 wins, which is pretty impressive for a team this young. The win last night over Charlotte was 120 to 104. And just looking ahead, they're playing the Sixers tonight at home. They have another home game on Friday against Washington at 7:30. That should be a fun night on St. Patrick's Day down in Cleveland in downtown. And then next Tuesday, Thursday, like I mentioned, they have that double road back to back at Brooklyn. So, all right, you want to take a break, Terry?
No, I'm all set. We
Okay.
got to keep taking. No, we will take a break. Sometimes when you're making a lot of shots, you go, I don't want to take a break. I want to, but we're going to take a time out anyway because you be the coach.
Okay, sounds good. We'll be right back on Terry's talking.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, we're back on Terry's Talking, David Campbell and Terry Pluto. Terry, let's talk some Browns. If we have some time, we've got some final stories of people playing against notable athletes. People keep sending them in, and they're really
Yeah.
entertaining. So we'll get to a couple of those. But let's talk Browns first. This is one of the craziest weeks. If you're an NFL reporter, there's up just 24 hours a day. There's moves happening. The Browns have made some, and we can just recap those real quick. First, they're bringing back center Ethan Posich, who had a really good season last year after Nick Harris went down in the preseason. He played really well, graded very highly, and the Browns have signed him to a new deal, so he'll be back. And then shoring up the defensive line was probably job one, and the Browns have signed edge rusher Agbo Okoronkwo and defensive tackle Dalvin Tomlinson. We just put up a film review by our film expert Lance Reisland. If you want to check it out at cleveland.com/Browns on Okoronkwo and his pass rushing and also what he needs to do better against the run. So check that out. But Terry, you seem like you like this approach where shoring up the lines is the way to go. We've seen the Browns through the years not worry about the lines as much and it's hurt them. This seems like a good approach, right?
First of all, people want to talk about Nick Harris, the other guy who was supposed to be the center. How can you count on him physically to stay healthy? Along with the fact we don't know how good he is. Where now we know, I think Posick coming into last season has started over 50 games in the NFL. And clearly he was underrated or he's figured out how to even be a better center. But if you're going to go out there with not only Deshaun Watson, but I think, Betonio, Teller, all these other guys, they want that center to know what he's doing. And I do think it's hard to be on the offensive line with Watson because of his kind of the improvisation style, wandering all over. So the offensive line has really got to hang together and be careful. Postix a key part of that. So that was good. Well, what about Ogbo? Go ahead. You want to go to him?
No, yeah, sure. You go ahead and talk about him.
The wide nine, and Lance would be his film review would be much better at this than anything I could say. He's a football coach. He studies this stuff. I do not stare at linemen when I watch games, just how it goes. But in terms of theory, a speed rusher from the other side in the way they play that way. Why don't you explain the wide nine, David? Because you're a lineman, you know more than I do about that.
Yeah, so fans, a lot of fans know what the wide nine is, but just if for those who don't, from what I have been able to learn over the years, when you're in an obvious passing situation, if it's third and long and you know the other team's passing, what the wide nine does is it puts the defensive ends outside the nine hole, which is, the outside the tight end, and it lets them get out in space so that they're not having to deal with like a tight end tackle chip. And, Jim Schwartz, when he runs this, you want to get Myles Garrett one-on-one in space with an offensive tackle so that he can go inside, outside, lean into him. And it just gives the defensive end, the pass rusher on the outside, more room to negotiate and try some different creative stuff instead of being caught up in the wash, tighter to the line of scrimmage. So that's basically what I think the wide nine is. So anyway, go ahead.
And Ogbo is fast, so put him there. Now, I've got it on, as they say, good authority, high authority. Schwartz is having a lot to do with their approach to free agency. He wasn't going to come in here unless he had some influence on how the defense is going to be assembled. And Andrew Berry, who's close with Schwartz, was very impressed with them when they worked together in Philadelphia in 2019. And Kevin Stefanski's not open for suggestions on defense. So it's a perfect time for him, him being Schwartz, to put his stamp, this is how we want to play it. So he wants those speed on the Ogbo and on the outside with Garrett. And then I hear it's interesting that he kind of, he likes Winfrey. He's, been looking at the players. Elliott, they think, could be solid. They think Winfrey maybe could be better than that. Now, Winfrey has some maturity problems and before, but I also know, and fans have already heard this on Schwartz, he's a disciplinarian. And so we'll see how that plays out, but it has potential. And what do you think of Tomlinson?
I think it was a good move. How it works. You need guys that can rotate in, and he'll start, and then they can rotate the other guys in to spell him. I think he was a good signing. It made sense.
Yeah, they tried for Hargrave. It just, I guess, the money got to be too much. And really, if it's close and you're Hargrave and you got a choice between San Francisco and Cleveland, what are you picking?
Oh, for sure. And just to compare the money, Terry, like Hargrave went to the 49ers for $84 million.
Yeah.
I think 40 of it was guaranteed. And Tomlinson's 4-year deal, I think, is $57 million with 27. Right. So the Browns were
not,
saving.
They were knocking on the door, though, that $80 million I heard for Hargrave. They were up there.
Right. It's just, is Hargrave that much better than Tomlinson that he's 27 million more quality defensive tackle? Like that's the question that I think the Browns said no to.
Yeah. They did. Like if you were to say, I'm just speaking, in layman's terms, Hargrave would have been an A, Tomlinson a B plus. That's kind of how that's why the difference in money.
Yeah.
But they have to get the line set up, and apparently Tomlinson was number two on their list, so that's where they went with it. And remember too, I don't know who else they're after with safeties, and that the Browns are still a tough sell to some of these players. You could say whatever they want, it's a tough sell to come here.
Yeah, we've seen that through the years, Terry. I do think it's better than it was, but what would you like to see them do next in free agency?
Well, I had wrote, we'll see, over the weekend, I'd written that I had heard Jordan Poyer. He's still out there because I had heard they weren't going to get Bates. And so they do need a safety. I'm not as hung up on, you got to get this fast receiver as everybody else is. I just would like get a pretty good receiver. It doesn't have to be great. I mean, a big part of it is they just, I mean, they got to get Watson straightened out, David. They just do. I think if Watson was playing like he did in Houston, and he's got Peoples-Jones, and he's got Amari Cooper, and he's got Njoku, who's played much better than I thought he would last year. I mean, you and Andrew Berry actually were right on him. I was wrong. And if you've got some of these other guys, I still think David Bell, and the Browns do too. They think David Bell could still be a very good contributor. That's not the problem. I mean, you'd like to have the guy to stretch the field, but you know, when you start talking about other things, I want them to keep working on the defense. Now, I heard I don't quite understand this. I was told this by a top person who knows Schwartz, that Schwartz views the run game as it's like defend by numbers, as opposed to you got to have this linebacker thing. So I guess that means safeties in the box. I'm not sure, David. Any thoughts?
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's down in distance too, but it's everybody's got to do their job so that someone can make the tackle.
That's, yeah, as opposed to having, as opposed to having the premier linebacker. Now they think he will be able to, with his scheme, you know, get more out of JOK and some of these other younger players, get more to Delpit than in the past. Of course, you always say that if you're a new coordinator coming in, you know, these guys are drafted fairly high and you can see some physical tools. Now, how did you think Delpit played last year?
I thought he got better and better as the season went along. And I think they really like him. And going back to what I asked you a minute ago, Terry, I would like to see them bring in a safety. And you were mentioning Poyer. I think I just saw that he might be going back to Buffalo.
Oh, really? After
he might
all
be
that,
off
huh?
the board. But Tim Bielik, our colleague, actually in January ranked the positions in the draft from best to worst, and safety was the ninth rated position in the draft. So it's not a great year for safeties. I think the Browns should look for somebody like a Ronnie Harrison, somebody who's who's got some playing experience, is good, maybe not great, isn't going to cost them a ton of money if Poyer's off the board. You know, somebody like a Ronnie Harrison who can come in and play as like a second or third safety, flexible, you know, somebody like that. And there's, you know, you mentioned Poyer, also like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is still on the board, I think, but those, they might be too rich. I don't know. Somebody maybe below those two might be around in a day or two that they might move on, but they,
of course, the Browns may be sitting still. Maybe they like both of them. I do know they have an interest in Poyer. I don't know how strong, but I know they have an interest because I was checking on a couple other names that I was told was no. When I got to him, I heard it was possibility. So maybe with Gardner Jones and Poyer, they're just like, okay, let's sit out here by Friday. Let's see where you are, you know, with.
Yep, with whoever's negotiating with you. Yeah, so. All right, Terry, we're running up against it here. I know you have to get out and watch some baseball here. We got about 5-6 minutes left, so. I'll tell you what, why don't we save the stories of playing against notable athletes for next week when we have more time. We've got some Hey Terry questions here.
Okay.
And I thought we could get to those in the last 5 minutes. We always have some good ones, and we appreciate you sending those in. If you want to send in a question or comment, just hit us at sports@cleveland.com and put Terry's Talking in the subject line. So, all right, Terry, this one is from Craig Everhart, and he says, "Hey, Terry, I've been a reader of yours my entire life and appreciate all your work. The Terry's Talkin' podcast has been a great way to keep up with Cleveland sports, although I now reside in Florida. Your recent Faith in You column on cell phone usage really spoke to me, especially in regards to the impact on teenagers. I've been teaching and coaching football in both Northeast Ohio and Southwest Florida for 2 decades and have seen firsthand the distraction that cell phones bring in the classroom, especially. Your article was so poignant, I created a lesson for my students at the Catholic high school I teach at, hoping it helps my students to evaluate their amount of cell phone usage. Thus far, the students have found it interesting and it sparks some productive discussions in my classes. Keep up the good work with the podcast. Go Guardians, Cavs, and Browns." And again, that's from Craig Everhart. Thanks for that, Craig.
Well, Ted Ginn told me periodically he runs a check of the players' equipment when they're on the field to make sure, because he's caught them out there with cell phones.
Oh, no
trying to tell them, you can't come out here with a cell phone. And besides, you get it broken. But it's like, you know, you want to cut off one of my fingers. How dare you take my cell phone? So there you go. Okay, that's cool.
Cool. Thanks for that, Craig. This one is from longtime friend of the podcast, Caleb Mackey from Columbus. He says, "Hey, Terry and David, The NFL continues to have the monopoly on the sports calendar despite not being in season. Everyone's talking about free agency. I hear Tampa Bay is interested in Baker Mayfield, and actually that's happening today, Terry, from what I saw, that mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield's headed to the Bucs. This made me ponder something, and I would love to hear your take on it. If you were an NFL GM surveying the free agency market, which former Browns QB would you try to snag, Baker Mayfield or Jacoby Brissett? Thank you, Caleb Mackey. Thanks for that question, Caleb. Terry, what
David,
do you think?
I'm going to let you vote first, but I have a strong opinion on that.
Oof. I would go with Jacoby Brissett. I just think he's a great teammate, and he makes the other quarterbacks better. Like, he probably doesn't have the upside that Baker Mayfield does, but I just feel like you'd want him on your team. I think you're going to say the same thing. What are you going to say?
I am. Yes, and by a clear margin. So, you know, as we're wrapping this up, I'm just looking. I kind of looked up Baker's five games with the Rams, where he finally got his completion percentage up over 60%, which he needed to do. But in five games, four touchdowns, you know, two interceptions. He was sacked 17 times in five games. I don't know what he's got. I really do wish him the best. I mean that. I was not there because I give him more credit for what happened in 2018 when he took over and 2020 than a lot of people with the Browns or following the Browns want to do. I just wonder is he beat up, David? I mean, that's another question. It might not have just been. Remember, the shoulder was the thing we all were there, but then he had the high ankle sprain. He went to Carolina, the high ankle sprain, and so on. Whereas Jacoby is durable. I think if you put him in the right system, you know, he could be a chance to be really good. I would take him over that.
All right. Thanks for that question. All right. So, Paul Cosgrove, another longtime friend of the show, sent in a question. I feel like I'm Jimmy Kimmel promising to have Matt Damon on every week or every night. But Paul, you had a great question about helmets and foam helmets and Tua. And we're going to save that for next week when we have more time. I promise you we will get to it next week. So it's going to take some time, and Terry's got to go to the ballpark. So, all right, Terry, any book recommendations you want to do this week? We have like 2 minutes left.
Yes, and I see the clock ticking down. So actually, this is a book that came out in 1999 by Frank Fitzsimmons called And the Walls Came Tumbling Down. It is the story of Texas Western winning the NCAA tournament, first time that five African-American players played against Kentucky and Adolph Rupp. It is – I don't know how I missed this book. Because on top of it, my editor, Jeff Newman, who, like with Loose Balls and Curse of Rocky Calvito and many of these other books that in the 80s and 90s, he was the editor for this book. I just missed it. I happened to see it. The Texas Western story has always intrigued me with the Big Bear Haskins. And pick it up, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down, Frank Fitzsimmons. If you love basketball history, that is it. But here is the cool part of it. You know, everybody thought, well, they came out with five African-American players, and they ran Kentucky off the floor. Wrong. The Big Bear, if you're named Big Bear, you're probably not a run-and-gun coach. You are get out there and beat them up and all this other stuff. In fact, Haskins drove these players so crazy with his disciplined style. They would play these pickup games sometimes late at night where they're going behind their back and dunking and all this other stuff to get, you know, the freedom, the jazz style of it, as opposed to what the Big Bear made him play. So you know what he did? He outdid Kentucky with the toughness and smarts.
There you go. So check that out. My recommendation, Terry, today, the season three starts for Ted Lasso. And if you haven't seen that show, you should watch it. It's really good. There's a lot of chaos in the world. That's a very uplifting show. Check it out. So I think we're done.
We're done.
An express edition. We'll catch you next week. Thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll see you next time on Terry's Talking.